Welcome to yet another episode of the Delta Flyers with Robbie McNeil and myself. And this week, our special guest is our good friend, Jeffrey Combs, the very talented Jeffrey Combs. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
I am great. It's a very hot day here, but I'm really happy to talk to you two friends of mine. You know, we never worked together, you guys.
I know.
We never did.
I want to work with you, Jeff. I really do.
I don't understand.
Let's just start right now where it all began for Jeffrey Allen Combs, which was Oxnard, California.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What was it like, Oxnard in 1950s? What was that like? I mean, was it sparse? Was it kind of, I don't know.
Well, you know, a lot of the West Coast is dotted with agricultural.
Yeah.
And which Oxnard was, not that my family was in agriculture, and like military, aerospace, there were jobs there, like civil servant jobs. Point Magoo is there. So my parents were from the Ozarks, and they came to California like a lot of people did post-World War II and started, you know, had jobs and started a family. And so that's why I was kind of born in Oxnard. My dad was actually working at the time on one of the islands. The Channel Islands.
Oh, wow.
For the military, although he was a civilian, and he would be stationed out there for like, you know, 3 or 4 days and then take the boat in and be home for 3 or 4 days. So that was his gig. So we lived in Oxnard.
So, okay, that's why you were in that seaside community, Oxnard. And your father was a civilian contractor for the military.
Not a contractor, civil servant.
Civil servant.
So he was an employee.
Civilians that work for the government.
Right. He's a government employee that happened to be in the military side of it.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
And just so everybody knows where Oxnard is.
Yeah.
Oxnard is just a little north of Los Angeles and Malibu and stuff. It's along the coast. It's north of Los Angeles, but it's south of Ventura.
Of Santa Barbara.
Or Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Just kind of there. Right in the middle of that area.
And
it's
let's just give it the
Central Coast.
Central Coast. But let's give it more context. If you're buying real estate in Malibu, very expensive. If you're buying seaside real estate in Santa Barbara, very expensive. Oxnard, you could get get much more for your money.
The dream could still be alive.
It could still be alive in Oxnard.
And very family oriented, like you said.
I like Oxnard personally.
There's still a lot of farms out there.
Mm-hmm. I was watching an old Johnny Carson, and he was doing Karnak.
Karnak the Great, yes.
Yeah. He pulls out the envelope and he goes, Oxnard.
Did he really?
Yes.
He did that. He said
and
Oxnard?
And Ed goes, Oxnard. And he gives him a look and blows thing and opens it and he said, what's the least desirable part of an ox? Actually, Oxnard is named after a man. If you're from LA, there's a huge long boulevard in the valley called Oxnard Street.
That's a name. That's a last name of somebody, right?
Oxnard.
Is that what you're saying? Okay,
yeah.
Mr. Oxnard.
It's a beautiful last name for somebody. But he was a beet farmer.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Did not know that.
When we talk about Oxnard, my mind goes to this. There's some other communities around Oxnard. There's Camarillo. There's
Camarillo.
Santa Paula.
My sister lives in Camarillo. Santa Paula, Moore Park. There's Ojai out there.
Ojai, yes.
Ventura.
But I always think of... in Santa Paula, there's a small airport where Steve McQueen used to keep a hangar And he would leave Hollywood when he was on a TV star before he became a movie star.
Oh, my God.
He'd go up there on the weekends and he would fly airplanes. He had his motorcycles that he and cars that he raced in Santa Paula. That's all around that Oxnard area.
It was his toy place. It was his play area with all this amazing.
And it was country back then. And he could go riding his dirt bikes up in the hills and
So Steve McQueen's personal playground back in the day was Oxnard.
Was just in Santa Paula, just next to
Oxnard. It's kind of near Oxnard. It's that area.
Wow.
Anyway, I didn't live very long in Oxnard.
Okay, so give us, bring us up to date. Where'd you go from Oxnard to where?
Well, I honestly, guys, I don't remember much about my young childhood. I mean, who does? But I think mine was compounded by the fact that I didn't see very well. So I don't have very, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You don't know that you can't. Focus on things when you can't, when you have no
context, really. Yeah.
I've always been befuddled when my parents didn't see that I couldn't see. I do remember often being told, "Jeff, watch where you're going." Well, you know, would have been good. You know, maybe, I don't know.
Maybe an eye exam would have been.
So that was in second grade where that came up. But anyway.
But to your parents' credit, you're one of nine kids. So maybe you got lost in the shuffle.
Definitely.
In the order of nine, where are you?
It's complicated. It's sort of, we're a blended family. Early on, my mom was married once before and had two kids, my older brother and my older sister. And my dad was married once before and had an older sister. So then they got together and had one, two, three, four, five, six kids, but two of them didn't survive.
Sorry to hear that. Okay. And where are you?
I'm the youngest boy, and I have two younger sisters.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these are full, the younger sisters are 100% your blood sister.
One of my older brothers, two older brothers. You know, in our family, we never made those delineations of like, well, you're half.
From that.
Right. You never said that. It's just your brothers. Brother. Understood. Yeah. Understood.
I have a question, though, to go back to two of the children in your family didn't survive. That's got to be a profound experience. Do you remember that? Can you talk about that?
The first one was really sort of tragic in that before I was born, my mom was pregnant and a lot of tragedy in life. My dad's brother was killed in World War II. And they had a program after the war of we will disinter the remains in Europe and free of charge, if you wish, bring them back so that they can be buried in the family graveyard so you can be near them.
Yeah.
To me, that's just really touching, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what my grandparents opted to do. And you mind you, this is like maybe 5 years after the war.
Right.
So my dad, we were living in California, and my dad insisted that they drive back. And mind you, this is probably 49, 48, you know what I mean? For the reburial of his brother, his older brother.
Yeah.
And my mom was pregnant. And she didn't really want to go. But he really wanted to represent in every way for his brother. So she had a miscarriage when they got to Arkansas.
Oh, wow,
man. Wow.
So, wow. A lot of heaviness layered upon one thing, layered upon another there. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a lot for them.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Cut ahead to my I had a younger brother, Joey. Mm-hmm. And he didn't live very long. He was born with a lot of problems. My mom was way too old to have another child. I think she was 45. And in those days, in the 60s, it's like less hopeful than it is now.
Right.
And, he was born Down syndrome and with some real bad heart conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so he struggled along for 6-8 months and passed away. Wow. I was in fifth grade, and that really ripped a veneer off my reality a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Seeing my parents grieve.
Yeah.
As they did.
Wow.
So it did make a deep imprint that life is snatched like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, first of all, for sharing so openly about those very sensitive things, because they're important. And
I remember being very touched by all my class. They gave me a card and they all signed it, you know,
when
I came back from the break to go through the funeral and all that stuff.
Yeah, but it's just, you said you were in fifth grade at the time. So you don't really have, you're still a child yourself. You don't have the wherewithal to process a death of a family member at that age, and to watch your parents grieve, that must have been just scary as all. I mean, that must have also impacted you. Yeah.
I had never seen my father break down like that before.
Yeah. It's rough and the first time anybody sees their dad cry, it's just like it moves you and pulls your heartstrings and moves you in a way that you've never been moved before.
And also some really ghoulish things sort of happened. My aunt, my dad's sister, at the viewing, at the mortuary, you know.
Yeah.
I did not want to go up and see my
brother. Of course. I get that. I'm not a fan of those.
And so I'm on the other side of the room sitting there, and she came up and insisted to continue. You just got to come and see your brother in sickness and on top of the trauma is this insistence that you do something you don't want to do like that.
Did you ever talk to Kate Mulgrew? Have you ever had a conversation with her about these things? Because I know in her family, there were some siblings that were lost as well. And I know it had a deep impact on her life and her family relationships.
Oh, I'd like to have a conversation with her. Honestly, her first day on your show, I was in the same hair trailer with her for a little while, but we were dealing with our...
Yeah.
She was dealing with hair options.
Yeah.
Yes. The first day hair options for, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've ridden many an elevator with her. I had a nice conversation like that with Avery Brooks. More about we lost our mothers around the same time.
Mm.
Or at least we lost our mothers.
Yeah.
Too early. And
wow.
And so, you know, he's a bit of an enigma, but I think that's sort of softened.
For sure.
Rapport a little bit.
Wow. Yeah, I lost my mother very young. My mother was 39 when she passed away.
Oh, that's far too young.
I mean,
yeah.
That must have just devastated you.
Yeah,
it did.
How old were you?
I was 18.
Oh, no.
Or maybe I just turned 19. I just turned 19. Right after I turned 19.
Robbie.
Yeah, 39 years old. That's just tragic.
When you had that conversation with him, that was while you were filming on DS9 or afterwards at a convention?
We were in the makeup trailer after shooting.
Yeah, gotcha.
Wow. Getting out of makeup.
I have found with actors that there has to be an empathy to play characters, to put yourself in imaginary circumstances and feel feelings and have empathy. I find with actors, some of the greatest conversations in my life have been with other actors, you know, talking about things like this in a way that I think a lot of people are afraid to, often resist kind of.
They don't change the subject but you know, it is the stuff that pushes us around and forms us for better or for ill, you know, it to this day, it's, I'm sure you feel the same way, Robbie. My mother's not in my life. My mother was not there for my children.
Yeah.
That's when it really, you know, you put this stuff away and you compartmentalize. And then I had kids and I was like, my mom, you'll never know. My kids will never know.
Yeah. I know. Jeff, I took my grandmother who lived to her 90s, and I was very close with my mom's mom. She was awesome. And my grandmother passed away around 2003 or so, something like that. And my kids had all met my grandmother and knew that she was really important to me. And when she passed away, I flew back to North Carolina for my grandmother's funeral. And my daughter came with me. My daughter was about 13. Yeah, about 13 or so. My daughter came with me to my grandmother's funeral. And we went to the cemetery and did, and it was very emotional. And then after all of the services were done and we were just kind of taking some time by the graveside, and my grandmother's buried next to her husband who'd passed away and some other family members around.
Yeah.
And I said to my daughter, I said, Taylor, you know, you never met my mom, Grandma Vicky, you never met her. And she's buried right here in the cemetery. Do you want to go see where my mom's buried? And she said, sure. And Taylor, my daughter, 13, she was like, sure. Yeah, let's go do that. Yeah, Dad, that'd be good for you. And, you know, we should do that. And she seemed very lighthearted about it. And anyway, we walked over and I hadn't been there in a while. So I had to kind of look around and found it. And then when I stood there with my daughter, 13 years old, and we're looking at it for a few seconds, she suddenly burst into tears. Mm. She burst like, I don't know where it came from. My cousins were not far away. They'd walked over with us. And she said to me, I've heard about your mom. I've seen some photos. There's not a lot of them because my mom didn't like her picture taken. So there wasn't a lot of reality that I ever had a mother to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But when my daughter stood there with me and saw her grandmother's name on a stone, you know, and I think that was really, it was hard, but it was really important for my daughter. I think it really meant a lot to her to be there.
It also brought it real to her. All of a sudden, it wasn't an obtuse thing. It was
story, some history.
Hard, granted, reality, and there it is. And what did I miss here? My dad is so great. What must his mother have been like?
I also feel like, you know, you're talking earlier, Jeffrey, about how, you know, it's so tough for you not to have your mom around, to have seen, for your mom to have seen your children. But I will say this, I do believe that, you know, our bag of bones that we have, that is our body, it is animated by something that I believe is energy and soul, and it's still there. So when you say that she doesn't know, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say your mom's spirit knows. She's seen your kids. She's been there. She's next to you.
On
she's
some cosmic
on,
level.
On a different level, on a different plane of existence. She knows.
Could have guided them. She could have.
She could, most definitely.
And I don't know.
Your mom, I do believe your mom is the guardian angel for your children and for you, basically.
My mom was really a remarkable woman. And you want to talk about family tragedies. She is... I cannot imagine this. My mom is one of six sisters.
Mm, wow.
Like stepping stones. Mm-hmm. I think my mom's the second oldest. Mm-hmm. So their father, my grandfather, who I never met, was a truck driver. And in 1942, he was on a run and fell out of the truck and was killed. Mm-hmm. Leaving six stepping stone daughters and a wife.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And all of my aunts, are just they're all gone now, except for one. They were all just wonderful women. Mm. You know, all different and all just so loving.
Yeah.
And in the face of all of that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like, you know, one thing that comes to mind, Jeff, is the, you know, you come from a lot of large families, you know.
Well, when you're from the South, that stuff still happens sometimes.
The thing about large families, and I didn't come from a large family.
Neither did I.
The thing about large families that I see as an observer of them is there is so much love and so much
support,
amazing, just a tribe of people that are so deeply tied together in so many amazing ways. So it can bring all of these great gifts of love and connection and community But when you've got numbers that size, it's also going to bring a lot of heartbreak. There's going to be, there's just
one way or another, eventually.
Yeah.
Since then, I've lost my oldest brother and I've lost one of my younger sisters.
Yeah.
So we are, it's still visiting us.
Yeah.
Losses, you know?
Yeah. Part of it's the size and just the numbers, you know. I've got one sister, and in a way, I'm kind of glad, like, as long as we're good, I don't have to deal with, you know,
the
10 other, a dozen other people.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, yeah.
It evens out, though. You have all that joy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Our Christmases were chaotic and sane.
I can imagine. So Christmases were chaotic and insane. Let me bring this back around to acting, your career and creativity and things like that. Was there any of that in your family? Was there creative people? Were there people that painted or wrote or danced or played music? Was any of that?
No.
None.
Really?
Not really.
Wow.
I've heard that my grandfather, who tragically died, could play the, you know, like the guitar or fiddle.
Okay.
He could do that.
Yeah.
And I know that my grandfather on my dad's side was like a tenor in the church choir or something. High, you know, tenor voice.
Mm-hmm.
But musical to the point of having a career out of it, or anybody being any sort of artistic bent other than what? Quilting and crocheting and
crafts or things like that. Yeah.
Crafts. But I had no one.
So where did it come from then? Because you have been an incredibly creative, your career is not just some TV shows and things, but it's been theater and movies. And
was it grade school that play, or was it middle school play? What was it that lured you into this?
I was very lucky where I grew up. Let's just say that. Yeah. I actually grew up in a town called Lompoc.
Yep.
Uh-huh. I know where that is.
Me too.
My dad, civil servant, got transferred to a job at Vandenberg Air Force Base, mm-hmm. which is right outside of Lompoc. Mm-hmm. So near Lompoc is a town called Santa Maria.
I know that too, yes.
20 miles up north. And I just was born at the right place at the right time, because there was a, how do I say this? It's so serendipitous.
Hmm.
Before we moved to Lompoc, we lived in San Maria, and we rented this house that was on a dead end. And there was a field, and I used to play in that field for hours. So then we moved to Lompoc, and unbeknownst to me, that field was turned into a community college.
Oh.
That land was...
Wow.
We called it a junior college, but it was a community college was there. And as luck would have it, a visionary man, a true lover of theater and an entrepreneur of sorts, was the drama department head.
Mm-hmm. And
he loved theater, and he did everything he could for theater. Now, I'm in sixth grade. I'm in Lompoc. One day the teacher says, next week, sign this form. We're going on a field trip because we're going to go see a play.
Mm. Wow.
And a play. I don't know. Just... So we get in buses and we go over to, and this is before the big theater was ever built.
Yeah.
To this little theater. And I remember sitting third row center, just by luck. Third row center, and it was a children's production of Emperor's New Clothes.
Uh-huh.
The Emperor's New Clothes. Okay. Yep.
And I was like, what's this? wait. They're having a blast here. and this is a world. And I didn't realize it, but it made a deep impression on me.
Yeah.
And then it went dormant until I took a drama class for an easy A junior, you know, elective. It's an elective, you know, and girls, there'll be girls. Yeah. It'll be easy. Yeah.
That was at which college was that that you took that,
that was
elective?
My high school.
Oh, that was high school. You took an elective of drama class. All right.
I didn't even audition for the play.
Okay.
I didn't do that. And the teachers some days later said, Jeff, could you stay after? I was like, oh, shit. And he said, someone dropped out and I want you to do it. And I went, no.
Were you a shy kid? Were you a, I don't know why I would get the impression you might have been a little bit shy.
An introvert?
I was very hyper.
Hyper?
Because I was born in September. I was right on the cusp of getting into like even kindergarten.
Yeah.
Okay. Early. But two, you know, I remember, I have it here somewhere. My kindergarten teacher said, you know, it might be good for Jeff to stay back a year.
Oh.
Because of your birthday. Yeah, I'm a November birthday. It was the same thing for me. I'm early November. And so it was like, do we... And yeah, and I ended up being the youngest. I did start early, and I was always a year behind. Everybody got their driver's license earlier.
Not only just driver's license, how about like puberty?
Puberty.
No, it's
girls
tough.
Liking it's you. Tough. You're too, you're, oh, you're so cute, but you're not what they're looking for.
No.
They're looking for the, you know.
You're their little brother. You're not their romantic option.
You know, yeah, exactly. And so it was kind of, I was just a late bloomer. I was always like behind the curve that everybody else was maturing at, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so shy, yes, I was probably pretty shy, but I was also pretty kinetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't stop fidgeting. I didn't have the greatest attention span. A lot of, you know.
Yeah.
But by high school, you had figured out the glasses and the vision and things like that. So you were
reading. Yeah, but or... I mean, that was another thing. When you do find out that you need glasses in second grade and they put these things on your face, and then suddenly everybody's calling you four eyes and that really slams your spirit.
Definitely.
Kids are ruthless. Not cruel, but just sort of categorizing you right away. Oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So I was always called, like, you know, Ernie.
Yeah.
You know, for my three sons, you know, the youngest in the class. That was even in Spanish class. It was like, oh, there's no Jeff in Spanish. How about Ernesto?
It's like, Ernesto.
Because you look that good. It's like, great. Thanks, Teach. So,
So to pull you back in for the segue, what you were saying was there was somebody in your drama class had dropped out of the play, and your teacher had said, you need to fill in. And
I
you
want
said,
you to do
no.
this part. I said, yes. No. But they, him and a friend of mine who was playing the lead in this thing, kind of cornered me for like 30 minutes, and I finally relented and said, okay, fine. But I remember distinctly going home saying, why did I say yes?
Yeah. You know what's funny, Jeff? I'm going to pause you in your story for a second. Don't forget where you're at. I almost did the same thing. We had just moved to Atlanta. My little sister was taking tap or jazz class or ballet or whatever she was doing. And my mom comes home one day and says, hey, they're doing the Wizard of Oz at the dance studio and they needed 100 munchkins. You want to do it? You can meet a bunch of kids. And I was like, sure, whatever. I had never seen a play that I can recall.
Yeah.
And then the day of the audition, we get to this dance studio place and my mom's walking me up. I'm like, nope, I don't want to do this. I do not want to do this. Why did I say yes to this?
Exactly.
And my mother said, you have an appointment. You made a commitment. You need to go in there. You don't have to do it. You can tell them no, thank you, but you need to fulfill your commitment. I remember she was really big on that. Your name is on the list and they're expecting you.
Right.
And so I had to go in and they asked me to sing a song. I said, I don't have any songs I know. And they said, what about Happy Birthday? Just sing Happy Birthday. I sang Happy Birthday. And there was so much praise and warmth and support that I ended up doing the play. And that began my thing. But same thing. Like, why did I say yes to this? I was. Yeah.
The resistance is what's so remarkable. Like, I don't want to do that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So after high school, it was a natural leap for me to go to that college. My mom worked for one of the local high schools. And so she got these flyers from the theater department at the college about plays that they were doing. I'd get these things, and I'd look at them and stuff. This is like when I went to high school, you know? I was like,
yeah. Oh.
And I went over and saw a couple of productions. To give you an idea, I saw the first two things I saw there before I ever went there was, are you ready? The Fantastics.
Mm. Ah, love the Fantastics.
And Harold Pinter's The Caretaker.
Oh, what? The?
Wow. Those were the two that you saw?
Yeah.
Very different styles for those listening. Different.
Yeah, can you explain
totally
that?
Totally different. One's a musical, The Fantastics.
It's precious. Classic.
Yeah, classic,
precious, lightweight,
precious, you know, lightweight, sweet.
Try to remember the kind of September.
Explain Pinter, Jeffrey, to people. Well, the they don't know
British
Pinter.
Boiler pot kind
working
of
working class, very
urban, weird,
weird, slightly experimental, hear, very, very
it's kind of experimental
language.
Pinter pause.
Yes.
Can I just ask both of you, are you two fans of Pinter? Yes or no?
Yes. I am, actually.
I do. Okay. I like Pinter. Right. He's fascinating to me. His characters are just these people. It's really like dark snapshots of Brit urban living.
Right. Yeah. Post-war kind of.
Post-war kind of cynical. Yes.
And very cynical, dark.
Pinter pause bleak, is like he would write long pause. And so characters would come into a room and go, what are you doing? Well, you ask. You know, these sort of
long pause.
Dead pauses where nothing and everything is going on, you know.
Oh my God. This is at the junior college, right? You saw the play of the GC. Okay.
So by this time, you after my from seeing Emperor's New Clothes to deciding to go to this college.
Yeah.
This man had gotten a bond passed with the city of Santa Maria, as well as the college, got funding and built a replica of the Guthrie.
The Guthrie in Minnesota?
A thrust stage.
Oh my God.
Thrust stage. And if you ever, you drive up that coast sometimes and you go to Solvang and you notice there's a theater there. It's called the Solvang Theater Fest. Maybe you've seen it. Maybe you know it. It's the same dimensions as the theater that's on the campus because we would do summer reps and bus and truck, outdoor, indoor, outdoor, indoor.
Wow.
Six different shows.
This
is where I, why I'm here talking.
So the junior college, what is this teacher's name, this man that ran the place?
Donovan Marley. Donovan Marley, a icon in the theater world, especially on the West Coast.
And the JC's name was the junior
college? Allen Hancock College.
Allen Hancock College, which then when you graduated, you moved on to another university. Is that right?
I realized I'm doing a lot of plays. I'm getting a lot of experience. I'm working with older actors and really seeing how the discipline of all of this and the importance of it. But I knew that I needed more classwork, like an acting class, a movement class, a voice class, learn how to do stage combat.
Conservatory training, standard conservatory training. Yes.
Okay. And so I auditioned for a number of things and I got accepted to University of Washington, had an actor training program, Seattle.
UW, good old UW. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And so I moved to Seattle and lived there for 3 years and went through that program.
What years was that?
75 to 78.
So you went to UW. You're in Seattle. Did you like Seattle? Were you a fan of Seattle? I mean, how was that experience there, living there?
It was suddenly lonelier for me.
Yeah.
It's such great camaraderie and sense of company when I was at PCPA, Pacific Conservatory of the Performing Arts, which Helen Hancock College,
right,
as we call it, PCPA. Yeah. So now I was like, you know, kind of lonely. And then it's kind of being a California boy, that weather really took a toll on me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Seattle weather. I got to admit, it gets to me.
There's not a lot of sunshine going on.
All of a sudden, I could play Hamlet, I think.
Yeah. That's the ideal place to play Hamlet. It's Seattle. It's unbelievable.
In those days, it was pre-Starbucks. Everything.
That's right.
So I think there was one Starbucks.
Oh, my God.
Down at Pike Street. Like, it just opened.
Wow.
But I couldn't afford a fancy cup of coffee in those days.
From your program, anyone else hit as much fame as you did from your years there?
Well, my great good friend Harry Groner. He was 2 years ahead of me. There's a number of people that went through the University of Washington. Robert Culp.
Robert Culp as well. Wow.
Who's the guy who was in the original Dune, Kyle McLaughlin.
Kyle McLaughlin went to UW. All right.
Patrick Duffy.
There you go. Wow.
All before or after me.
Yeah.
My best friend, it wasn't quite so lonely for me. He got in the program with me. We'd known each other since third grade, fellow actor.
Oh, that's great.
And we roommated together for a while up there, and we're still, today's his birthday.
What's his name?
Mark Harrier is his name.
Happy birthday, Mark Harrier.
I feel like I've worked with Mark Harrier before.
I think I've directed
him in a pilot I did many years ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he's a very talented actor.
He kind of reminds you a little bit of Sam Waterston.
So you knew him from Lompoc days, is what you're saying?
Oh my god.
That's
awesome. I love that you're still friends with a childhood friend and that he's a creative person.
Yes.
That you can still share that connection. I have a couple of friends like that, that I have been friends since we all started in community theater together. And
there's nothing better in the memories that we can pull up a word and they go, oh God, don't know what I'm talking about. You know, or nothing better than old friends.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And, right out of there, we all got in a shitty car, you know, one of those drive-away cars that needs to be in San Francisco things on our spring break. And we went down and auditioned in our last year for what we were going to do for the summer, you know, regional theaters. And I remember one of them was the Old Globe in San Diego. I'm not going to get in this, man. I'm not the Shakespeare guy, whatever. And they said, Jeff, we'd like to offer you a summer. Come on down.
Ah, oh, nice.
Wow.
So from Seattle to San Diego was, you know.
That's a huge difference. You went from no sun to only sun, because San Diego is probably arguably the best weather in the nation, I'm going to say.
Kind of like paradise.
And the Old Globe is so exciting. It's in Balboa Park, right?
It's a
beautiful, beautiful environment, great theaters, a bunch of different theaters. I was supposed to do a play there once. I actually went down and was looking at the housing and all of that. It was a new musical. It was going to be in their smaller theater.
Are you musical?
I used to do a lot of musicals. Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
He can sing.
My daughter had just been born. This was 1990. My daughter had just been born. I had gotten cast in this new musical that was going to be premiered down at the Old Globe. And I went down to look at the cast housing because I had a baby, a brand new baby that was a month old. So I wanted to take a look at it because we were living in LA at the time. And then literally while I'm looking at housing, my agent called. This was on a Saturday. My agent called and said, hey, remember that show you auditioned for in New York just before you moved out, called 6 Degrees of Separation? He goes, they want you to come back. I think you're going to get this and it's going to Broadway. And I was like,
I had
auditioned months before. They auditioned for that show Jerry Zaks, who directed Six Degrees, the original production, Jerry Zaks has a reputation for using the audition process as a bit of a rehearsal. He'll see people over and over and over, and he'll try different things. So he kind of works out all of his directing ideas by looking at what the actors do when they audition and kind of stealing that idea and this idea. And
that's crazy.
So I had auditioned for that show 3-4 months before, maybe.
Right.
And gone in a couple of times. And then I moved to California.
Do you remember who was going to direct the thing down in the Globe?
I don't even remember. All I remember is it was a Saturday and I'm down in Balboa Park. We had just looked at the housing, which was nice. They had some nice condos or things they had for people. And I had gone by the theater just to poke in, and I was supposed to start rehearsals like in 2 weeks or something.
It's amazing. Oh my God. It's amazing.
And then I literally on the Saturday, my agent called on a Saturday. He's like, you need to fly to New York tomorrow. They want to see you Monday.
Yeah.
Because they had cast an actor. Sorry to go off on this long story. They'd cast an actor named Paul McCrane because I was out of town. I didn't go to my last audition because Jerry had auditioned over and over and over. And I had moved to California. And I remember them calling and saying, they want to see you again. And I said, I'm in California. I'm not going to go back and do this little, you know, 6 week run at the new house off Broadway. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to pick up my life to
do
6 weeks.
It's not worth your time.
I had moved on. Well, the show opened in the new house, the small theater, and got the greatest reviews of all time. But Paul McCrane couldn't do any more than the 6 week run.
I see.
And so they were going to extend the run through the summer and then move to Broadway in the fall. And they had to recast Paul because he could only do the 6 week run. So that's why they called me, and I flew back, and
it doesn't matter.
Anyway,
that's the part,
but that's my old Globe story. I never worked at the old Globe. I was very
almost so close. Jeff, I don't know if you know this, but Robbie actually played the original Jack in Into the Woods. That's Robbie.
I was the second.
Oh, you're the second Jack.
Kind of like Six Degrees. I was the Broadway. Six Degrees Broadway original cast. Mm-hmm. Into the Woods, I was the First National Tour original cast.
Maybe you should join us in the Rat Pack, Robbie.
Mm. Ooh, look at that.
I did a little karaoke with Robert Picardo recently. So.
I'm sure you did.
he forces everyone.
So funny.
Is Bob in the Rat Pack? Who else in the Rat Pack?
No, Ethan Phillips is.
Ethan is.
Ethan joins.
Bag of jokes.
His bag of jokes. Yeah.
There's so many of his jokes now. All I have to do is give him the punchline and he's, you know. Anyway.
You go to the old Globe, you do all that. Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
Well, when I went to the Globe, I wasn't Equity, which is Stage Actor Union. I wasn't Equity. And the Globe in those days toured two of the three summer shows over to Scottsdale, Arizona.
Ooh, good old Scottsdale.
For about a month, you know? Yeah. And while we were over there, the artistic director of the Arizona Theater Company in Tucson came up and saw the shows and also held auditions for people to be in his company in the coming fall to spring season.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, here I am. Well, I'm not going to that because, you know, I'm not Equity. This is Equity. It's an Equity, and I'm not Equity.
Yeah.
And my dear friend, Jonathan McMurtry, who had sort of taken me under his wing, he was a stalwart at the Globe. He said, Jeff, just go audition. I've talked to him. You've seen the shows. So just go to the audition, okay? Mm. And I got offered a
contract there,
a contract and an equity
card.
And a card. You got your union card.
That's
too.
A big deal.
Yeah.
So I moved to Tucson soon after when that was all done, and lived there for 5 months. And the Globe asked me to come back the next season and do another summer. Yeah. You let me think about that. Yes. And so, at the end of that summer. On my birthday, actually, I come out of the dressing room and a woman is there and she says, I'm an agent. I have an office in New York and L.A. and I would like to represent you. What do you think?
Who was that agent?
Her name was Susan Smith.
That was my agent
back in the day on the show, the sci-fi show we did.
On the sci-fi show we did.
Holy moly!
She is no slouch, as you know, Robbie.
No, she is no slouch. She was kind of a big deal.
She was a real big deal of the boutique agency. She was the
classiest one.
What did she see you in the Globe? What did she watch where she came up to you afterwards?
I was in a kind of a gangbusters production of Comedy of Errors.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right.
And I played one of the, there's two sets of twins in that. There's masters and their servants, and they're both twins and they get mixed up and people, you know, that one comes to the town where the other, they're long lost sets of twins. They don't. Right. Mm-hmm. And they meet up and they don't know, and people around them get them confused, and you know, it's a Comedy of Errors.
Yes.
And it was zany and fun and kind of the hit of the season, and that's what she saw me.
Yeah. And she loved your work, clearly, for her to say that she wanted to rep you right there. I'd love that.
Yeah, but there's a dark side to this story though. Uh-oh. Robbie.
No.
Were you around when Susan Smith and Associates changed to Smith Friedman?
Ooh. Yes, I think I was. I signed with her in New York.
Okay.
And she wasn't in New York full time at that time.
No, she wasn't.
What year did Smith Friedman happen, Jeff?
I know exactly because I'm looking at an award up here on my 1983.
I came after that.
So in 1983, I'd been with Susan Smith for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, it is really hard to make the transition to LA. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to make the transition from being a theater actor to a film and television.
Yeah.
Actor. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows you. You haven't done anything on film for anybody to judge. You know what I'm saying? It's So it takes a little time for you to get some footing and some traction.
Yeah.
I was doing a play. I was playing the lead in Playboy of the Western World.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Irish play, classic, down at South Coast Rep. And on opening night, the stage manager hands me a lovely parchment envelope. He says, "Jeff, you got some mail." It's like, oh, and it was from Susan Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I went, oh, she's welcoming me, saying, "Have a nice opening," right?
What a nice thing to do.
I opened it up and it said, "This is a difficult letter to write, but I'm taking on a partner and we have to do some things. And so
make some changes and we're going to let you go from our agency."
Yeah, thank you very much. And
how dare her.
And on parchment, too. How dare she?
And on opening night.
And on opening night. Oh, man.
No, let me correct that. An hour before term.
An hour before opening night. Oh, God.
It's like, that was pretty devastating for me.
Yeah, I bet it was. She was a tough cookie. I mean, she was a real tough cookie.
She was real hard to... I got along with her okay. It's just that, you know, her partner, the guy who hit the...
Who was the Friedman? I don't think... I remember that name, but I don't think...
Alan Friedman, I think was his name.
Oh. Yes, I do remember Alan Friedman.
I never got to know the guy. He was like unknowable. You couldn't go in and talk with him in his office. He was just... when he became a full-fledged partner, you know, and they go through the list, I'm sure he goes, I don't know.
It sounds like you got 86 by Friedman from the story.
Yeah.
Although I don't think anybody tells Susan Smith what to do.
Right. No.
Anyway, that was a big disappointment in my career. It didn't take long for me to get another agent.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And that play swept the LA Drama Critics Circle's Award that year, won 9.
Wow.
And you were still living in Arizona at this time, or no?
Oh, no.
Okay, you're back. You're in LA now, correct, at this point?
Yeah. I'm after the... I took Susan Smith up on her offer, obviously. Right.
And moved to LA at that point.
And moved to LA. Yeah.
I got you. Okay, perfect.
And I'd been there like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And then yeah. and then the axe fell, and then it was like, well, okay.
Sometimes the tough realities. I mean, I've had some what at the time were really difficult career things to go through. So one time I was cast in, as a lead in a big movie that was highly anticipated that had a cast of young actors who all went on to become movie stars. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew that this movie was going to make movie stars out of a lot of the people that were involved in this movie. It was just highly anticipated. It was a big deal.
Buzz,
and I was
buzz,
cast.
Buzz.
Buzz, 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 buzz. I was cast.
Yeah.
I had a contract. I had a deal.
Yeah.
And I was a few months away from filming this movie, a couple of months away, mm-hmm. when the director fell out. Ugh. And there was a delay. And then they found a new director a couple months later, not maybe a month later. And that new director came to meet with me since I had been cast. He was meeting the people that had already signed contracts. And we had a meal. And I knew in that meal that I was not going to be doing this movie. And sure enough, the next week I got a call from Sherry Lansing, who was producing the movie. Sherry Lansing called me and said, this is a difficult call to make.
Yeah.
It was the same.
That was your parchment letter right there.
That was my
your personal
letter.
Parchment letter experience.
This is why I relate to baseball. Because a great hitter fails.
Yeah.
70% of the time. A great hitter. Is the 300 hitter. That means he's humiliated and fails to do his job 70% of the time.
Yeah.
It's just, and you have to just
suck it up, move on.
Suck it up.
Get going back to bat.
And just have the resilience at some point anyway to go, okay, fine. Let's just move on here.
Yeah.
Is there a time in your life or an event that kind of creatively defines the way you approach working?
I would say it's my first PCPA. This was a hot spot. I mean, it was a foundry. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's where I was tempered.
And
it was a lot of experience and a lot of really great actors going through there.
Yeah.
Because in the summertime, Donovan would travel the country and audition actors. And so it was a melting pot. I spent a summer with Robin Williams before he was Robin Williams.
Wow.
The people that went through there and have gone through there that you two have probably worked with is a lot.
Were there lessons or practices or rituals that you learned then creatively about approaching work that you still do to this day?
Preparation, discipline. He really exuded the notion of an ensemble. Mm-hmm. You're all in this together. There's no ego here. Everybody pulls in the same direction. And Robert Blackman was putting me in costumes when I was 18.
At PCPA? Where Robert Blackman was? Look at these freaking, so many connections. Is PCPA still in existence today? Is Donovan still alive? What's happening?
Donovan is still alive.
And okay.
He's farther up the coast, but he's no longer affiliated with the program, although it's still there. But I
still
does theater, but I don't think that the heyday, the golden era was luckily when I was there, a little bit after.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It sounds like Donovan, you have a lot, most of your, who you are today, you owe to Donovan and PCPA.
Everything.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. I love that story.
Here's a story for you. When I first went there, what Donovan had all the actors do, even though it's just a two-year college and it's a semester, but there's a slate of plays we're going to do. Everybody shows up on a particular night and you have to audition in front of your peers and the directors.
Wow.
That's what you're going to do. So I went in there. I'm barely 18, pimple face, scrawny little doof. And I do everything wrong. I really do. I do everything wrong. You know, the piece I chose was so wrong. Of an old man.
Oh.
An old man.
And you were 19
you
years
were,
old.
Yeah, you were a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. It's wrong. And I took it very seriously. Took it very, very seriously. Worked on it a lot. An old man, monologue. Had a cane. And I got up there. And I said my first line, and the place roared with laughter.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
And I went, okay. I guess it's funny then. Okay, here we go. And Donovan cast me in a lead.
Off of that audition.
Wow.
An audition that I did everything wrong.
Wrong.
And I said, Donovan, you know, why did you do that? And he said, energy.
Oh.
You can't teach that.
Oh.
And I'm forever grateful for that. It doesn't mean that everything went woo after that. But it was a really lovely way to start.
Oh, yeah. He gave you a chance, even though everything you did was absolutely wrong in that audition.
It wasn't about whether I did it right. It was about he had enough vision to go past that.
Yeah, he could see beyond it. Yeah.
Yeah, but,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And just a little addendum to that.
Yeah.
The Emperor's New Clothes that I saw in sixth grade.
Yes.
Directed by Donovan Marley.
No. Oh, wow. So he totally affected you then.
Wow.
And then it was dormant.
I found that out decades later.
You didn't even know that. Oh, wow. When you asked him that question, Donovan, why? Why did you cast me? I was waiting for him to say, the cane. The cane is the reason why I cast you. You brought that cane and showed commitment. Jeffrey Combs, but no. It was your energy. He saw your energy.
Well, I think what he meant by that, just a kind of a commitment, a stupid bravery, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know what he saw there, but I'm forever grateful for it because I don't know what I would have done without what I do.
Yeah,
yeah, I hear you. Well, we've come to that time. We just want to say thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. For all of our Patreon patrons, we get a little bit more of Jeffrey Combs because he's going to be answering some of our questions. So for those of you who are Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. For everyone else, we will see you next week. Once again, thank you, Jeffrey Combs. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Jeff.